It's Friday, February 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, U.S. presidential politics turned into a shouting match last night. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is here to talk about what happened. People in Iran have been voting today, the first time that's happened since last year's historic nuclear agreement. President Obama wants to close the Guantanamo prison in Cuba. There is strong opposition.
That's why we have a place at Guantanamo, because you capture an enemy combatant and you want to hold them for the duration of hostilities, which is permissible under international law.
You'll hear both sides of that argument. That's all ahead on International Edition. The latest debate among Republican candidates for the U.S. presidency Thursday turned into a shouting match as the candidates tackled issues such as illegal immigration, U.S. policy in the Middle East, transparency of candidates' tax records. But most of the publicity was targeted on exchanges that mildly can be termed contentious, from candidates Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz aiming their remarks at the man who leads the race so far, Donald Trump.
Well, you're the only person on the stage that's ever been fined for hiring people to work on your projects illegally. You hired some workers from Poland.
No, I'm the only one on the stage that's hired people. You haven't hired anybody.
He is promising if he's elected, he will go and cut deals in Washington. And he's right. He has supported, he has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Democrats. Anyone who really cared about illegal immigration wouldn't be hiring illegal immigrants.
Well, joining us in studio is Jim Malone, VOA's national correspondent. Jim, was this the most raucous presidential debate you've ever heard?
Well, can I take my flak jacket off first?
Yeah, please do that.
Okay. It's getting pretty testy. The last debate before this in South Carolina, I thought that was very heated with Jeb Bush. Well, he's gone. Now, listen, what we saw last night was it's coming down to crunch time. And Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz realize they have no alternative. They have to go after Donald Trump. The question is, I mean, they pummeled him. Trump tried to respond. The question is, will the Trump voters care, or people on the fence? And is it too little too late? I mean, where, if you're in the anti-Trump faction in the Republican Party, why wasn't this going on a month and a half ago?
Well, it could also be staged or said that maybe they are trying to reach down to the level of what some people say is the campaigning and the rhetoric of Donald Trump. Do you see that as well?
Look, what I see is they're attacking him on a number of fronts. They're trying to undermine his immigration stand by pointing out that he was fined once for, you know, hiring undocumented workers. They're going back into his past donations to liberal Democrats. That's going to undermine him among conservatives. They're questioning whether he's a real conservative. And Rubio questioned him about his health care plan, trying to get across the fact he's not providing specifics. Again, for people who want facts and want to delve into the specifics, there was plenty there to create doubts about Donald Trump. But we're not in a regular campaign cycle anymore. This is about people who are angry and who see Trump as the best vehicle for them to vent their anger and frustration. Will that continue on Tuesday? The polls suggest right now it will. Will there be an effect from this debate? Too early to know.
Does geography have anything to do with this?
Well, in a way, Trump's appeal spans geography. I mean, he is favored in Massachusetts on Tuesday. He's favored in Alabama and Georgia. I mean, he's found a way to tap into something in the Republican Party. The other two can't do that, and they're also playing defense. Unless Ted Cruz can win in Texas on Tuesday night, his campaign could be in real trouble. That's his home state. The same goes for Marco Rubio on March 15th when the campaign goes to Florida.
So what happens is that would a consolidation do something? People listening around the world, in addition to wanting their question answered, why are people supporting Trump? They're trying to find out what can be done and should anything be done to consolidate any kind of vote against Trump.
There's a great deal of interest, especially among the Republican establishment, in getting behind one candidate, most likely Marco Rubio. Here's your problem. The other remaining candidates see a ticket for them moving forward. John Kasich could win in Ohio on March 15th. Why would he get out before then? That's the problem they face. They're staying in for now. The longer that goes, the more that helps Donald Trump.
Well, the Democrats have South Carolina to look forward to. And how do you see that shaping up?
Another potential turning point here for Hillary Clinton. She has a big edge there, thanks in large part to African-American voters who are weighing in for the very first time now in the Democratic primaries. That's important because that's a real key constituency. Unless Bernie Sanders, through the southern states on Super Tuesday, like Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, and others, can find a way to cut into Clinton's edge with African-American voters, Sanders may find himself trailing, and that could continue well through the primary season.
Do you think there's a possibility that the headlines have already been written, Trump against Clinton?
There is a possibility. But you know what? Let's let the voters speak. Super Tuesday will tell us a lot, and March 15th will as well. I think by the middle of March, particularly on the Republican side, we may know a lot.
Jim Malone is VOA's national correspondent. As always, Jim, a pleasure to talk with you and to learn from you, and stop back soon.
Always a pleasure.
Jim Malone with us here on International Edition. It's time now to move from politics over to social media. Andrew Palczewski is with us again, our social media guru. We'll see if he has moved into position here in front of the microphone. I believe he has.
Locked and loaded, ready in position.
Is politics big? What else is big? Is it the Academy Awards? What's trending?
It's the Academy Awards, but we've got to talk about Donald Trump and this debate. First of all, with this debate on social media, just the tweets back and forth during the debate match the fervor of the debate. A lot of people from the different sides, supporters of the different candidates, tweeting back and forth. But a lot of people just fed up with it. My favorite, I think, was somebody took a screenshot of, I guess, the captioning person. At one point, just put up the caption for the closed captioning for the hearing impaired. They just put up the words, unintelligible yelling. And that was pretty much...
That's what it was.
You had several moments of that. So a lot of people saying this was by far the most contentious debate. But good TV. A lot of people tuned in and were tweeting along and said, this is pretty entertaining for a Thursday night to watch.
But you have to wonder what this means, even to all the people. And we know there's kind of an age barrier between social media and regular media and things like that. But I just wonder if people have just had enough across the board.
I think there's a sense of that for sure. It's a long process, longer than I think really any other country in the world, this whole nominating process and election process. So I think people are kind of getting fed up. But as the primaries move to the different states, people are piquing their interest and checking in. And of course, these debates always stir up a lot of interest.
And then there's the Academy Awards, the Oscars on Sunday night.
Yes, different kind of contest. We have the Academy Awards, and Twitter has announced that they're doing a special little emoji for the Oscars. If you use hashtag Oscars, you'll get a little Oscar statuette that pops up.
I can't wait.
This is something we talked about for the Super Bowl. They did this for the different brands. They got little emojis if they spent a lot of advertising money. I guess the Oscars is a big enough thing on its own that it just gets one without having to spend. But a lot of interest in the awards on social media. Who might win? Leonardo DiCaprio may finally get the Oscar that everyone says he is so long deserved. But we'll find out Sunday.
He was good in that movie, but very depressing. And anything else that come up, or just that's about it, huh?
Well, we'll see what people have to say about the Oscars. There's always a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking, so to speak. People saying, oh, well, this person should have won, or I can't believe this movie won. So we'll, I'm sure, have that next week.
Andrew Palczewski is BOA's and International Edition's social media guru. And this is BOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Negative emotions such as stress, depression, and anger have been linked to an increased risk of heart disease. Scientists at Penn State and Columbia Universities say that these emotions can lead to an impairment of the autonomic nervous system, which regulates important functions of the body, including heart muscle activity. One way to gauge autonomic regulation is by determining heart rate variability, which is the difference in pauses between heartbeats. Over 900 participants were asked over an 8-day period to report any daily stressful events and feelings of negative emotions. The researchers found that those who had said these events were more stressful or who had increased negative emotions had lower heart rate variability than those reporting a lower level of stress and bad feelings. Those with a lower heart rate variability are said to be at greater risk of cardiovascular disease and premature death. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This This is International Edition. Millions of Iranians are voting in high-stake elections today that could shift the balance of power within the hardline-controlled Islamic elite by ushering in a reformist comeback or maybe help conservatives tighten their grip on power. We are happy to welcome to International Edition Shireen Hunter. She is a research professor at the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. Shireen, thanks for being with us. Of that introduction, what do you think this election is all about? What do you think the headlines will be?
Well, I think that the elections in general, first of all, two things. Election is going to test to what extent Rouhani is going to be able to have support, parliamentary support, for the programs that he's trying to implement, which are essentially both in the economic field and in foreign policy, greater engagement with the outside world. Especially, I think that with European countries, even though obviously they now have close relations also with China and recently trying to have it with Russia. But I don't think that when it comes to really the fundamentals of Iran's politics, it's going to have such a great impact. Part of it is that the really major decisions, whether it is in the regarding the economy or in foreign policy, are taken outside of parliament.
We have seen long lines of voters waiting in long queues, waiting hours to participate in the election. As a matter of fact, the voting was extended for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. The Western lead so far has been, it's the first polling since this nuclear deal last year mm-hmm. led to the lifting of sanctions. Is that indeed the truth? Is that the reason for such participation, or is that a normal participation in Iran?
Well, we have seen large participations. For example, in 97, when Khatami got elected, you know, it was very large participation. Then later, when I think that the first term of the Ahmadinejad, the reformists more or less boycotted the election. And so that turnout in that election was fairly low in 2004. I think that one of the experiences and the lessons that they have taken from these experiences is that boycotting elections and those type of strategies, it really doesn't help those people who are middle of the road or reformers or whatever one wants to call them, and that it's much better to participate in an election because, I mean, if you have a large participation and everybody knows that, you know, Rouhani has a lot of supporters in the country, more or less the same people that supported also Khatami and others. And so if you have a large participation, they cannot prevent everybody from being elected.
Well, we will be watching closely as some of the results are scheduled to be released,
right.
I believe, on Saturday.
Right.
Shireen Hunter is a research professor at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service here in Washington, D.C. Shireen, thanks for so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Thank you. This is International Edition. This past week, President Obama said keeping the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay open is contrary to our values, as he released a plan that, among other things, examined 13 potential sites for transferring the suspected terrorists, but the plan did not propose any specific locations. Although support for Mr. Obama's position has been expressed by many, both domestically and internationally, it has met criticism by some high-powered Republicans in Congress, and that does not bode well for congressional acceptance. Also opposed to the president's plan to close Guantanamo is Clifford May. He is the founder and the president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and he joins us now. Mr. May, thanks so much for being with us. What are your chief concerns about closing Guantanamo?
Well, I think it needs to be thought through a little bit. President Obama says that we're at war with Al-Qaeda and with ISIS, with the Islamic State. And in a war, one of the things you do is you kill your enemies, and indeed President Obama has been doing that, not least with drones against Al-Qaeda and also, of course, against the Islamic State. The other thing one normally does in wartime is to capture enemies, not kill them, but capture them. The president has not done much of that. I think one should, both because it's better, not least for the person we're talking about, to be captured rather than killed, and because you can derive intelligence from a capture. If you do capture someone, you need to do something with those prisoners of war, even if they're illegal combatants, and they are if they practice terrorism. And so you need a facility to keep them. They shouldn't be put into the criminal justice system, for example, the United States. And that's why Gitmo was created. That's why we have a place at Guantanamo, because you capture an enemy combatant and you want to hold them for the duration of hostilities, which is permissible under international law. And you don't necessarily want to give them a lawyer and a trial and a presumption of innocence, followed by release if their guilt can't be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, which it often can't be because our soldiers are not gathering evidence the way the police do. For all those reasons, as long as we have this war, and I think we do, we need a place like Gitmo, and in fact, we have such a place, and we should preserve it. There's no good alternative.
Clifford May is the founder and president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Thanks so much for being with us. We welcome to International Edition Professor Matthew Waxman. He is at the law school, a professor there at Columbia University in New York. Professor Waxman has held a number of national security policy positions, some with the Pentagon, some with the State Department, and he's also testified before Congress calling for the closing of the Guantanamo prison. Professor, thanks for being with us. For our international audience, why do you advocate the closing of what is called Gitmo?
Well, I think at this point, a problem with Guantanamo is that it is indelibly associated with abuse of detainees. There's a perception that Guantanamo is a legal black hole. But for many people, around the world, Guantanamo is stained. And I think closing Guantanamo, moving detainees into the United States, is a step towards putting detention policy on a much stronger footing.
What is this doing as far as international relations that the United States has with its allies?
Our Guantanamo policy has long been a source of friction with even some of our very closest military allies or coalition partners in combating terrorism. I think one of the problems with the president's plan is that it's not clear that closing Guantanamo but bringing detainees into the United States and continuing to hold them without trial really addresses the underlying problem. I think closing Guantanamo and moving detention operations into the United States will address part of the friction with our coalition partners and allies, because Guantanamo, I think, is uniquely stained. I think it has a special reputation, and it's one that is a drag on our public diplomacy. But even if Guantanamo were closed, even if the president closed it tomorrow and continued to hold some of those detainees without trial in the United States, legal objections, ethical objections will continue. And that's one reason why we're seeing some human rights and civil liberties organizations pushing back against the president's announcement. They're worried that the president is talking about closing Guantanamo, but in their minds, not addressing the real underlying problem, which is detention without trial.
Professor Matthew Waxman is a professor at the law school at Columbia University in New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is International Edition. We have just learned from Geneva that Gianni Infantino of Switzerland is the new FIFA president after winning a second-round vote. He got 115 of the 207 eligible votes to take a decisive majority ahead of Sheikh Salman of Bahrain. He is the 45-year-old Infantino is, anyway, general secretary of the European governing body, UEFA. Let's turn our attention to business. U.S. and global stocks rose modestly in early trading today. And we welcome back to International Edition our business reporter, Jill Melandrino, who joins us from our New York bureau. Jill, is that positive early trend continued?
I think what traders are looking at right now is this more of a technical market versus a fundamental market. So it seems as if the bounce that we got in oil, the bounce that we got in the banks, and those were the two key sectors in the S&P that we were looking for participation in. Is this more of a bear market rally bounce? And what we were looking at yesterday was the S&P futures, which is an indicator of how the market will trade on the following day. It actually crossed a very key technical level. It's 50 daily moving averages, 1945, and that was a key level that traders were looking at. So once it moved past that's really where the rally got some energy from. At the end of the day, traders are still very speculative as to whether oil has bottomed and whether the banks have bottomed, because there's still a lot of uncertainty out there between the oil supply glut and what's happening with global central banks and how they're dictating policy.
So we're all still looking as to when we think the bottom's going to be, and we can go ahead and invest some if we have any money to invest.
Right. Yeah. I think we'll be in a very trendless, choppy market for the next few months.
Jill Melandrino, thanks. She joins us from our New York bureau. That's going to wrap up our show. Visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On February 22nd, the United States and Russia, as co-chairs of the International Syria Support Group, or ISSG, and the ISSG Ceasefire Task Force, announced the adoption of a broad cessation of hostilities in Syria. They established terms for the cessation of hostilities and proposed that it commence at midnight, Damascus time, on February 27th, 2016. If implemented and adhered to, said Secretary Kerry, this cessation will not only lead to a decline in violence, but also continue to expand the delivery of urgently needed humanitarian supplies to besieged areas and support a political transition to a government that is responsive to the desires of the Syrian people. The terms for cessation of hostilities state that the nationwide cessation of hostilities is to apply to any party currently engaged in military or paramilitary hostilities against any other parties other than Daesh, Jabhat al-Nusra, or other terrorist organizations designated by the UN Security Council. Over the coming days, said Secretary Kerry, we will be working to secure commitments from key parties that they will abide by the terms of this cessation of hostilities and further develop modalities for monitoring and enforcement. This is a moment of promise, but the fulfillment of that promise depends on actions, said Secretary Kerry. All parties must meet their commitments under this agreement, ensure full implementation of United Nations Security Council Resolution 2254, and cease attacks on each other, including aerial bombardments. And all parties must remain committed over a period of time to make possible a political end to this conflict.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.